It's a daydream that lots of us have had, but what would it really be like to quit work forever when you're 30? Unbridled freedom, fun, or boredom? Welcome to Making Sense. It's the podcast for people who want financial freedom without giving up their coffee. I'm Frances Cook, a financial journalist and fellow financial freedom seeker who makes money simple for you. Now, Pete was a pilot for years. It's a pretty expensive job that cost him $300,000 in training and actually didn't earn as much as many people would think. However, he knew he wanted financial freedom and to retire pretty young in life. So he was focused. He wanted to earn as much as he could, live as cheaply as possible, invest everything left over, in order to hit financial freedom. And he did. Now he lives on a hobby farm and he started a family. So what did it really take to get here? And would he recommend this to others? Making Sense is on a mission to make money simple, and I just couldn't do that without the support of KiwiBank. It's really important to me to only work with companies that understand that mission. And for KiwiBank, their purpose is to help Kiwi and Aotearoa be better off. So bringing you real stories of different approaches to finance is one of the ways they're making a difference to the lives of their customers. This is Making Kiwi Better Off. This is Kiwi. And I'm joined now by the man best known as Captain Fi. You have been bouncing around the financial independence world for a while now. I feel like a lot of listeners might have already come across you, but I always find it interesting where these sort of legends of people who actually managed to do it and achieve it, where you first got the idea. So when did you first hear about financial independence and what got you interested in it?
Yeah, g'day. Well, first of all, thank you very much for inviting me on the show today. We were just saying before, it's been a while since I've done a podcast, so just brushing the cobwebs off, get the nerves out. All right, so financial independence. Well, I think I first stumbled across the term probably around 2015 or 2016. I think I was basically like delving into like, you know, obsession over learning about investing because my personality, I tend to learn best when I like fully immerse myself into something. I guess I found myself in a fortunate position where I had a good income and I had no debts, and I basically started stacking up some savings, and I'm like, well, I've got to do something with this, right? I think I tried to like buy an investment property, and it was very scary, and there were some mind games with some real estate agents, and I took that very personally, which obviously was a bit silly. They're just doing their job. I think I wasn't having much luck with like term deposits, and God, I probably shouldn't say this publicly, but I'm pretty sure I downloaded like a bootleg copy of The Barefoot Investor. Thankfully, it didn't like infect my computer with malware. No, and it was really good. And so that was like, I started learning about, shares and financial well-being and the things that you should get your shit in order, like, you know, insurance and, you know, superannuation, all that kind of stuff. And like, I was really impressed. So I did go out and buy a copy. So Scott Pave, if you're listening to this, please don't sue me. I have actually gifted like hundreds of copies of your book. So there you go. I've probably earned you about 50 cents in royalties or what's that? <You know? laughs> Yeah. And basically I was just like, wow. Okay. So Scott Pape got me thinking about investing in shares. I signed up to the blueprint. So I don't know if anyone listening to this remembers the Barefoot Blueprint. It was like a subscription club. I think I literally just Googled something and found myself on Mr. Money Massage's website. And again, if anyone's listening is interested in like the FIRE movement or financial independence, retire early, they would have definitely heard of Mr. Money Massage. And if you haven't, he's a legend.
He's the best.
Yeah. He's got some really awesome stuff on his blog. I think I read one of his articles. I think it was the shockingly simple math behind early retirement. And I'm thinking like, no way, there's got to be more to this than that. And like, oh gosh, like it's actually, you know, retirement planning is really not that complicated. And then, yeah, I just basically started like binge devouring all of reading all the articles. I think I had, you know, like an iPad. It had like every article or my favorite ones open so I could go back and read them and stuff.
It's amazing that you say it started just back in 2015, 2016. That's not long ago. And then here you are now, early retired. So that's a maximum of 10 years. How long did it actually take you?
Yeah. So, well, I mean, funny we just mentioned this in Mr. Money Moustache's article, The Shockingly Simple Math Behind Early Retirement. You've actually learned in that the time that it takes you to retire is basically a function of your savings rate, which is sort of how much money you can stash away and invest as a function of, I guess, your, you know, the income that you get after you've paid all your taxes and stuff. You know, I remember a few data points from that graph. And so if you save 10% of your take-home income, it takes 55 years to build up enough assets to retire. If you can save 50% of your income, it takes 17 and a half years. And don't quote me, always get this last one stuffed up, but if you can save 80% of your income, I think it's 7 years. Or maybe just under, but it's like a law of diminishing returns, right? So the reason why I start with 10 is because most Australians, I think the national savings rate is around 10%. And, you know, obviously that's like 55 years is a long time. It's a lifetime, right? That's a career. So that's what most people do. They put like, you know, 10 to 20% of their salary maybe into their super. And that's it's kind of how it rolls, right? But yeah, if you can put away half your income, like it really spices it up and things can go quite quickly. Maybe my experience is like a cautionary tale of maybe what not to do, just in terms of like, you know, getting some pretty severe burnout towards the end. You know, I had a very good job. I had no hex debt. So I had a scholarship for my engineering degree. And then, you know, I was earning a good flying wage, working overseas a lot and earning tax-free money. Along the way, I had various like side hustles and which grew into a business. And so, you know, having taxable income over to, you know, 200,000 massively helps. I was, you know, either living in like a work supplied hotel or donga, or, you know, living in my subsidized rent, meal allowances, all this kind of stuff. So, you know, my expenses were pretty low. Also had no dependents, had no kids.
That helps.
Didn't have any pets. So my cost of living was basically next to nothing, right? You know, $30,000-$40,000 if that. So I was basically some months I would be saving 90% of my wage. I was also, as most people in the FIRE community, we would invest in 100% growth assets or close to 100% growth assets. So shares. Which, you know, I guess I was very lucky. We had a very good run in the share market as well. I think we might get into it a bit later in the interview, but yeah, when I did sell my portfolio recently, I think I cashed out with like a 10.5% annual growth rate over the
wow
8 or 9 years I was investing. So, you know, that's pretty good. That's the long-term average that everyone's sort of aiming for. But, you know, there are those black swan events, things, you know, crashes do occur. And, you know, if it happens right before you want to retire, that's obviously going to set you back a few years. So yeah, look, I was very privileged. I had really high income, low cost of living, and everything just went well for me. So took a big risk and it worked out. So that's not to say that it's going to be like that way for everyone.
Yeah, I think we'll dive into that more in a bit, because I think that in terms of jacking up that income, figuring out the investing, they're really important parts of it. They do make it a lot easier to get through this journey. I want to paint a bit of a picture first, though, because I think, you know, you're in the good bit now. What is life like? Because you are financially independent. What's a typical day like, would you say?
Yeah, life is good. Yeah, at the moment, I've a young daughter, and she... we're going through some sleep regression. So
she is very young. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. There's a lot of coffee involved at the moment. I guess for people that maybe aren't familiar with me, I saved up all this money. I've consistently bought shares, built a big investment portfolio and retired from my job a couple of years ago. I'd rented a small, house apartment, with my partner, then fiance, and now wife. And we had a pretty basic lifestyle. You know, we still traveled internationally a couple of times, but yeah, we were really spending around, I think it was about $70,000. So it was like she had a job, and yeah, so I was spending, you know, $30,000 or $40,000 and earning like $80,000 in dividends. And yeah, it was just crazy. My accountant kept passing me. He's like, "What are you doing? You know, you've built this portfolio and you're not even using it. You're not even spending the dividends. You keep talking about wanting a farm or an acreage. Have you considered doing it?" And as it turned out, there was actually some tax benefits to doing that in Australia. And yeah, so that's what I ended up doing. I sold my shares, and then I didn't have enough to get the property I wanted, so I had to take a loan. Sometimes I joke that, yeah, I unfired. So I spent a year and a bit fired, and then yeah, it was just like, well, okay, we need to, like, it was just that life wasn't fulfilling for me. So yeah, so basically cashed in the chips, bought a beautiful acreage up here in Queensland, just north of Brisbane in the hinterland, and we absolutely love it. So a typical day, we never set alarms, so we'd wake up usually when the sun comes up, or like I said, lately when baby's sort of screaming at us. We have a cuddle in bed for, you know, half an hour or so. Then, you know, it'd be time to sort of get up and on with the daily routine. So, you know, coffee, we like to sit on the porch there and watch the sunrise. It's really beautiful as it sort of comes over the hill there and just over the rainforests. Go take the dogs out for a walk, come back, bit of brekkie, watering the plants in our gardens. And then really it's just the day sort of takes us wherever. My wife goes to like a mums and bubs group. We have swimming lessons for her, which is good, so we go and do that. And then, yeah, there's like story time at the local library. And, you know, I might spend like a half a day, or, you know, maybe not even, maybe like a half a day a month on the computer doing some of the website stuff.
I love it.
Travel is a bit harder, like, as you can appreciate as a mum, with young family, it gets a bit harder. So we love hosting our friends and family here. So like I said, bought this big, beautiful property. Honestly, it's great. It's like, you know, a bit of a humble brag. It's like a resort, living in a resort. It's just really cool. There's a lot of really fun activities to do around here in the hinterland. So, you know, whether it's like going to the rock pools, like, you know, waterfalls, swimming, you know, camping, fishing. I love going out on the boat now. Got myself a little tinny, and yeah, it was funny. My wife's like, "What are you doing?" when she saw me sort of towing it up the driveway. but hey, once we started catching fish and crabs, mud crabs was the big one. Once we started getting the mud crabs, she was on board pretty quick. So that's a favorite thing of mine to do is, yeah, when we have friends, particularly from the southern states or overseas, we go out on the boat, we go and put the pots out, and yeah, get a good feed of mud crab. So it's good. I mean, like, seafood and fish is pretty big in New Zealand, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We love it. But you guys have got some different things than what we do. That sounds amazing. I mean, it sounds like where you've landed is a little bit of a combination of family life, living off the land, living off the farm, and then also having, as you say, your website, your financial communication as well, which sounds like an amazing combination of things to give you a bit of structure, give you a bit of meaning, have that really enjoyable, purposeful life. I find it really interesting that you say your initial version of financial independence, you didn't find that fulfilling and you didn't last very long on that. Walk me through a bit more on that, of what you thought you would maybe be doing there and why it didn't work out for you, why you pivoted into what you're doing now.
One of the reasons why I did end up leaving my flying role was I had like a family health emergency. So my mom was quite ill. She was terminally ill. And one of the reasons I wanted to basically leave work and go back home to Adelaide was to spend time with her and to care for her. And which I was able to, and it was really good. And we had some amazing time, and you know, unfortunately she did pass away. And it was a very hard time. And it really strained my relationships with other family members. And I just thought, look, we need a fresh start. And my partner, she was working, and she wasn't particularly tied to any role or any location, I should say. And up here in Queensland, I had some of my closest mates that I considered blood almost. So it was really about, getting away, starting fresh, and coming to somewhere where we felt loved and supported. And honestly, it was a great call. Yeah, definitely feel like I've got that more sense of purpose here, sense of community. Like even through, I keep bees. I have a pretty large apiary down in one of the back paddock there, and been getting involved in some of the local beekeeping clubs through the agricultural show, Queensland Agricultural Show, getting into the competitions, doing the judging. You know, it's been wonderful, the sort of friends that we've made. Like, I'd sort of joke around as well. Like, I've gone through a few ride-on lawnmowers and tractors, and like, because, I was like, I'll just get a cheap one to start, right? And, when I sort of worked out that wasn't up to the task, sort of slowly upgrading, and I keep buying him off this bloke, and he's a really nice guy, and I've kind of said to him, like, well, I know I've just been buying lawnmowers off you, but you realize you've kind of been adopted into the family as like the stand-in grandpa, because he's real grumpy old fella, but he's really nice. He's a nice guy. He's like, he always comes over and helps me fix him when I break him and stuff. So just little silly things like that. Just like meeting someone on Facebook Marketplace and has like turned into this awesome friendship. Like, two of our closest friends here, we met them on Facebook Marketplace because we bought some blueberry plants from them. As it turned out, our wives were had due dates around the same time. And yeah, so through the common hobbies and also starting a family, we were able to create this beautiful friendship, and we hang out like multiple times a week, if not every day, some weeks. So yeah, definitely feel like we've landed on our feet here. We've got these beautiful neighbors. We all have barbecues and stuff, and yeah, it's just wonderful. I mean, we've got one neighbor we don't like, but I mean, everyone has one neighbor you don't like, right?
There's always one. There's always got to be a fly in the ointment. There's got to be someone at the bottom of the heap. I got to say, like, everything you're saying there is very, I really, really identify with it in terms of, here in New Zealand, I live in Te Awamutu, which whenever I'm dealing with people in the work sense, because my business is still very active and everyone just assumes I'm in Auckland, our biggest city. And so then they'll be like, oh, can we just like pop along and say hi? And I'm like, it's going to take a little bit of organizing because I am 2 hours drive away. Like, yes, I'll be there eventually, but we're going to have to organize at least a week in advance. And it's that old thing, right? Of like, money doesn't bring happiness, but it brings options which you can use to build happiness. And I very much identify with the version of happiness that you've built, where you've got the people that matter to you, but it's, maybe a smaller community, a different community, and you're really enjoying that life where you can do more for yourself. You're more connected to the things that you do and the food that you eat and all of that sort of stuff. That to me is such a rich life that I really, really enjoy. Like, yes, it's still work. Of course, there's work involved in it, but it's a really enjoyable life. Was it where, did you always know you were headed that direction?
I think so. When I was born, not that you can really remember that. Well, anyway, my family lived on acreage in South Australia, rural block. You had these big forests that you could just roam around in, and you could cut down a tree and build a fort, and you could have a bonfire, and you could, shoot a bow and arrow, having space. It was great. Having spent so much of my adult working life in a very high stress, high tempo sort of profession, And, you know, living in like a city apartment or, you know, airport sort of vicinity, it's hard to do that. Like, you know, especially like hot air, for anyone that lives on an airbase or, you know, near an airport, some of the chemicals and the firefighting foam, you really don't want to be growing a vegetable garden. PFAS, Google that. Anyway, so coming out to here was just, yeah, I guess it was kind of always the goal and the dream. I guess I always thought that, I wanted to, you know, not necessarily be a stay-at-home dad, but certainly be an awesome dad and be at home as much as possible. And so it just felt like a really natural fit to, you know, get some land. And the way it's really worked out with, you know, it would be great if the mortgage was paid off, like it would reduce a bit of financial stress and pressure on me. But, you know, we're able to make things work at the moment now. And so, you know, I'm trying not to fret too much about having it paid off and earning more income through my business. It's just more about, hey, it's actually working pretty well. We've got enough to keep us super happy. As long as the mortgage is paid at the end of the month and we're sort of getting ahead, that's kind of good enough for us at the moment.
Do you have a timeline on how long the mortgage might take?
Yeah, so look, we took out a 30-year mortgage because of you know, just the lowest repayments, right? And when you know, after my mum passed away, she did leave an estate, and so we I received maybe about $250,000, which just went straight on the mortgage, and that reduced the time down, I want to say, to like 22 years or maybe 21 years, just from, you know, obviously paying off that big chunk. People that follow my blog online, they'll see I do publish net worth updates inspired by Aussie Firebug. I thought I can do that as well, and it will keep me accountable. I sort of talk about the different investments that I have, and one of the other investments we have is just a duplex. And if the plan is kind of hopefully in sort of 6 or 7 years, that duplex should go up in value enough that we can sell that, and that should pay off the remaining mortgage on the acreage. If we need sort of an exit plan, but otherwise, it's just a matter of trying to just sock away extra onto the mortgage where we can. So.
Life looks different for everyone. Maybe you're buying your first home, growing your whānau, dreaming of travel, or simply trying to stay on top of things. KiwiBank has the tools to help you manage your money your way. Find out more at kiwibank.co.nz. This is making Kiwi better off. This is Kiwi. Okay, well, let's talk about how you built what you've got so far, because it is incredible. And like you say, being able to make the choices you have for lifestyle, for family, I feel like that's what a lot of people are looking for in life. So people often talk about you have to earn more or spend less. It's really one of those two is the main options that you're going to have to choose between. When you started out, at least, did you have a focus between those two? Did you have a main area that you lent on?
Frugality is something that sort of came pretty natural to me. I've always been a wheeler and a dealer, like ever since school, you know, whether it was like zombie chews, like Chubba Chups, you know, like buying them from the grocery store and in bulk and then undercutting the tuck shop. I think it was Pokemon cards, you know, it was like buying and trading Pokemon cards. So, yeah, look, I've always had an interest in money. And I think it's, you know, it's that cliche line of it's not, you know, money for money. It's about what it can do. And ultimately what I think that is power. I think it's a pursuit of wanting personal power or control over your life. So I guess the frugality side of the things came very easy to me. You know, having started my career in engineering, you know, geek out on efficiency and trying to, you know, optimize things. So there's that aspect. But, you know, the other side of the equation is I did earn a really good income. Saving money, like when you're single and you have no dependents, like it's pretty easy. But getting to those saving rates when you have a really high income trouble, it's almost effortless. Like I literally couldn't, I don't think I could have spent the money that I was earning because I would have just felt ridiculous. Like, I mean, seriously, friends, like once you have everything you need, like you've got a car that drives, you've paid for some insurance on it, you know, you've gone out for drinks once a week or something. Like what else did I want to buy?
And yet people manage it. I was literally talking today about a guy I know of who created a business, did really well with it, sold it, and has spent it all and is now in a lot of trouble financially. It's kind of crazy that people can spend some huge amounts of money sometimes. I mean, I guess that's why private jets exist, right? To take the money off you. But it is incredible how if you don't have that mindset that you came from where you were like, these are the things I need and that I enjoy and I don't need more. I do think that's an important mindset to know what actually makes you happy in life.
The lifestyle creep can really smash you. Like, don't get me wrong, like I love a bigger boat and a car with more torque to tow it. And then I love a nice big shed to stick them all in. But yeah, that'd cost me like $300,000. It's just not really appropriate, I guess, for my families.
It is the classic farm saying, what does a man need once he's got a big shed? A bigger shed.
yeah, exactly right. So we're just keeping it simple, keeping it groovy. Like I would say that, you know, I probably went through my life with like these little blinkers on, oh, fire is easy, just save money, it's not that hard. I think it pissed off a lot of people because they're like, no, you have no idea how hard it is. You know, I've got three kids. Do you know how many blueberries these freaking kids eat?
Why are they all addicted to blueberries?
Yeah. And do you know what? As a father now, I can totally vibe with that because – you know, I used to see my sister buying like, you know, really expensive berries and stuff for my nieces and nephews. And I was always like, oh, it's really expensive. Do they really need that sort of thing? It must have sounded really condescending. And then now as a dad, I'm like, no, there must be always like three punnets in the fridge ready to go because, you know, she loves them. So I think you just want the best for your kids, don't you? So it's very easy to justify purchases and spending for the kid as opposed to maybe for yourself, or at least for me, that's how it's working for me.
Yeah. Well, I do think, though, there is a really good point you made there about you found it a lot easier because you had a higher income. And I'm sure that didn't happen accidentally. So that is actually a really core strategy and a great skill. Walk me through the income streams, the side hustles, what ones worked really well in boosting you along? Were there any that didn't as well?
Yeah. Now, I'll point out, actually, I was doom scrolling the other day. I won't tell you where because it'd be embarrassing. And I saw one of your videos come up and you're talking about side hustles.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I loved it. I love it. You just got to cut through the bullshit because there's so much bullshit out there. I tried a lot of different side hustles, you know, because like I said, I'm this personality where I really want to immerse myself in it and I really wanted to get a higher income. So I just wanted this to happen overnight, right? Which, you know, it's not going to happen overnight. So obviously the more income you make, the easier it gets. Like I said, I got a scholarship. I went through the Australian Defence Force Academy. So I basically got paid to study and then came out of the other side of ADFA with a full-time job in the Air Force, getting paid a good salary and obviously no hex debt. Now, I put a lot of that money into my flight training. I went through as an engineer, always wanted to fly, be a pilot, but I didn't have the scores through the flight testing initially to sort of make it there. Thankfully, basically, I kept reapplying, and eventually, you know, you apply enough, you sort of remember the answers to all the questions. I think they just felt bad because I kept coming back, and they're like, "Oh, right, we better."
They're giving you a pity approval.
Yeah, exactly. They're just like, "Oh, geez, I think we're really low on recruits. We better give this guy a go." You know what I mean? So no, I was fortunate enough to make it through in the end. But yes, I certainly needed money to pay for my civilian flight training. So I basically, I think it was like $340,000 from Go to Woe. Like it's not all upfront at once. I basically paid as I went. I talk about my like savings and side hustles in two phases. Like the first phase was like pre-qualification. And the next phase was like post-qualification, right? So as I mentioned earlier, like as a kid, I was always pretty savvy. Like, hey, mister, give me like $2 and I'll wash your car. And we'd wash someone's car, me and my mates, we'd buy a sponge and a bucket kind of thing. And then we'd go and get hot chips with that. And so I was kind of no stranger to being a little bit sort of unique and quirky into how I could sort of make money out of a situation. And so, yeah, look, I did all sorts of things, like even when I was a kid, even through school, like I cleaned graffiti from shopping centers, picked up cigarette butts, and other rubbish, flipping lollies and Pokemon cards and collectibles and things like that. And then, yeah, when I was at, university, people might not know what this means, but like webbing, and part of like field equipment. So like pouches, and things from like army disposal stores. I noticed that people wanted certain things and I could, buy them online or I could buy them from Aussie disposals and I could resell them on eBay. I think that was back when eBay was like a big thing. France, have you done any eBay selling?
I haven't actually. Do you know what? I'm so bad at identifying the things you can flip. So I've just stayed away from it because I'm scared of getting stuck with something that I can't resell.
My sister, she paid for, it was nearly $20,000 holiday in America just by reselling op shop clothes.
Amazing.
What else do we do? Tutoring. That was a really good one. So that actually you get paid good money for tutoring. It was in the end, it was like 100 and something bucks an hour. And plus most of the parents would make me dinner and yeah, it'd be great. So, you maybe do like an hour before dinner and then an hour after and, walk away with some money. And that $200 that'd get me an hour in the Cessna or, some of the smaller aircraft. It sounds a bit scummy, but like, hard refuse. Do you get hard refuse in your town?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd love a noodle through the hard refuse. Like I was picking through the trash, sort of you find things in there. I found an air compressor and all it needed was like a valve and a washer. And then I sold it for like $300. If anyone's looking for ideas for rummaging, like tip shops, they're awesome. I had a mate who got a Scotty Bonner mower for like $100 at the tip shop, sold it for like $600 to someone that was going to restore it. So, you can find some really cool stuff. You just have to kind of know what you're looking at in your market. But yeah, but a lot of those sort of side hustles, they were all based on essentially money for time. And time is finite. So it's like there was a limit to how much I could sort of make, right? Because you only have so many hours in the day. But anyway, that's sort of that plus the wage from my Air Force job was how I paid my way through flight school. And then I became an instructor. Yeah, so used to get paid a bit for that. I was teaching people how to fly. A little bit of charter here or there when contracts came up. So I basically had my day job with the Air Force and then I'd have, I'd be earning money on the weekends and after work and leave periods and that kind of stuff. I think it's around that time I ended up transferring within the Air Force and went on pilot's course. And when that happened, I just didn't have the time to work on these side hustles anymore. So I really just had to basically go full 100% at work. And that was okay because, like I said, it was so full on. So I didn't really have any opportunities to spend the money anyway. And I didn't really need the money because my civilian flight training had been sort of paid for. So I guess we fast forward maybe another 5 or 6 years. I'm discovering fire and I'm like, shit, I want more income. So I have another whack at side hustles. But this time my side hustle is like property development, online business. So affiliate marketing, AdSense sites, and basically ways that I can create money without like putting time into it. So I guess you'd call that like scaled or like leveraged time. Because it's kind of cool. Like I love it when Google emails me and they cut me a check for like $1,000 or whatever for, display ads on one of the sites. It's a cool feeling. It was definitely not easy in the beginning. But after, you know, 5 years, 6 years, started seeing some really good results with it and basically grew it into a full-time business that replaced my income.
I love it. I love that so much. And then, of course, you take these income streams, you are investing them, like you say. So tell me more about the investment side. What are your favorites?
I mentioned Scott Pape and the Barefoot Investor. When I was like reading his books and reading a lot of his special articles through the Blueprint, he's sort of talking about the power of passive investing. He's sort of talking about, you know, some of these great investors, Charlie Munger, Warren Buffett, and they're talking about how passive index investing is really the sensible way to go. And in many ways, it actually outperforms active investing. And I'm like, well, hang on, you're telling us this and you've got this passive portfolio and you're telling how good it is, but you're still telling us, oh, go and buy Farm Pride. So I started like, you know, individually buying shares and yeah, I think I got a bit of egg on my face. Sorry, pun definitely intended, when Farm Pride sort of went down from $1 to 60 cents. And that was my first lesson of, you know, concentration risk and that kind of stuff. So so I ended up sort of divesting from those and I'm pretty sure I just went, like, bought a lot of like listed investment companies, LICs, because Scott was saying how good they were and I was reading how good they are and all these fire blogs and yeah. But I think I really overly complicated it, because I was like, oh, I'm going to buy this lick when it's trading at a discount to its net, assets, and but only if there's a delta and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, tried overcomplicating, putting all these like rules in, thinking I could sort of game the system and and basically just, I started buying a couple of ETFs because there are a few writers, like maybe Steve Gower from Strong Money Australia and Aussie Firebug, that were explaining the differences in structures between like LICs and ETFs. And I think the sentiment was sort of shifting away from LICs and more towards ETFs as a bit more of an efficient vehicle or like structure for investing. And it really appealed to me. And, you know, so I started buying them. And I was like, oh, I'm not going to sell the LICs. I'll just get them churning away and I'll just sort of start buying ETFs. And there's a bit of a market correction in there somewhere. And I've noticed that like my licks were actually, I could sell them for less than I bought them for, which got me really excited. And people were like, what the hell? Why are you excited about making a loss on a transaction? Like, isn't that silly? But no, why I was excited, because I could sell them and then I could instantly buy that version in an ETF. And that just meant that I didn't have like a tax liability and I could move everything into my neat little ETF piles that I wanted. Now that I've sold all my shares and obviously, the focus is paying down the mortgage, but I did want to get some skin back in the game and get the ball rolling. So I thought, right, enough's enough. I'm going to put some money aside. And I just bought an all-in-one fund, high growth fund. And that just, it's simple. It's like, it's one fund, one brokerage, click buy, done. And the fund manager, I think this one's a beta shares fund. And so, you know, they do all the portfolio rebalancing. It's an Australian domiciled fund. So it's, that's easier for me in terms of like tax and estate planning and all that kind of stuff. I think one of my reasons why I didn't use this in the past was because the fees were quite high. But these days, like, it's almost like a race to the bottom in some of these ETF providers in terms of the fees. So, you know, I think like, even if it's like 0.2, like what's that, 20 basis points, you know, that's like what it works out to be, like $20 a year for every $10,000 you have invested. I mean, someone please fact check me. I could have misplaced the decimal place, but like $20, like what does $20 buy you these days, Francis? Like, you get a Subway? You guys have Subway in New Zealand?
It's not 1.5%, which I think is like, I think that's more the risk. People get really focused on fees, which are important, of course, but we're more thinking along the lines of like, 1.5%, not the 0.2% versus point whatever, you know, you get to a certain level and it's, you're now spending so much time on it that it's too much brain power going into it. You can also live your life.
Yeah. The analysis paralysis. And that's like, that's something I've been a bit guilty with, because, you know, wanting to have that engineering brain on and wanting everything to be perfect, wanting to have that 100% solution, like it's sometimes never going to happen. So one of the big things that I learned in flight training was you really need that 80% solution on time. And you really just need to make a decision. If it's not the best one, okay, you can reevaluate later.
Totally. You can always adjust course. Get the best one for now. Adjust as you go. It's fine. It's never, I think sometimes people feel like they have to get money perfect. And no other area of our life is perfect. Every other area of our life, we're constantly learning, adjusting, getting it better, you know, hopefully. Money doesn't have to be perfect. Good enough is great. Keep learning, keep adjusting, you'll be fine.
That's probably a good summary of my investing career, I guess you'd call it. Started individual. Well, technically, I started with like managed funds and term deposits with banks, and then went to stock picking. Didn't do very well out of that. LICs, ETF, and then ETFs, multiple funds, and then now just an all-in-one ETF.
I love it. I feel like everyone goes through a stock picking phase and then we all have to learn the hard way that it's not going to go well.
Yeah. And thankfully I never did that with crypto. I mean, I did buy some small amount of, you know, Bitcoin and Ethereum, but I've got friends and they're like, oh, I just bought, you know, fart coin and potato coin and blah, blah. And it's like, are you joking? Like, you hear yourself, man, fart coin, like serious?
I know the crypto world is just like, I know some people love it. That's fine. Good for thee, not for me. It really is not for me. It's so silly sometimes.
Do you remember NFTs? Like when someone's paying $900,000 for a JPEG of a bored ape? Like what the heck? I mean that had to just be money laundering, right? Like
surely. I saw some figures the other day. Now this is entirely off my head. This is not the actual figures, but it was along the lines of, they checked in on all these old NFTs, especially the apes, and there was some that had been around the $700,000 mark that were now going for $5. And so that's just insane to me. That is money to burn, quite clearly.
I mean, not to sound like a conspiracy theorist here, but my friend sent me this meme about fine artwork as well, and I was like,
oh, yes.
And it's something along the lines of, you know, like commissioning someone, paint them $20,000 to paint an artwork, get it valued at $50 million, donate it to an art museum, and then get a $50 million tax write off. And I was like, oh geez, if only it was that simple. But
hot money tip.
yeah, just fraud.
Yeah, fraud, great way to earn. Just don't get caught.
yeah. Oh god.
Oh, I love it. Look, we're running up on time. I could talk to you for hours. It's brilliant. But I just want to briefly touch on the burnout aspect, because I do find the financial independence aspect attracts very focused people. You are clearly one of them. The burnout aspect, just briefly run me through why you think you hit burnout, and do you have any advice for other people to avoid it?
Fire was like my escape plan. You know, I was working so hard. They were busy weeks, you know, like 80-hour weeks. And then, you know, in the military, you're not just a pilot. Like as an officer, you're responsible. You have many responsibilities and different obligations. Every little nitty-bitty grid of admin was like no member to complete. You know, all this like cost-cutting within the government, it just put all this extra stress and strain on the people. And you know, it was almost like, hey, let's flog a dead horse. And so it's like, honestly, it's pretty common in Air Force pilots, particularly the squadron that I was at. And so I guess there was that aspect where, you know, I was sort of sick of swimming, like overworked, and I was kind of seeing what some of my mates over in the airlines, they were sort of doing half as much work as me or less, and getting paid like double. Or, you know, the same to double, but, you know, for like half the workload. And so I was sort of getting, maybe thinking, you know, the grass is greener on the other side. Like I was sort of getting a bit jaded from that. I'd sort of done, you know, I'd done deployments, you know, over to, you know, warlike service, so Iraq, Afghanistan. And, you know, it was just like not, not where I wanted to live my life. And I saw the stress and the strain that it places on them. And, you know, many people that had served longer times, you know, they had struggling family lives. You know, they might be separated from their partner. Their kids didn't really want to see them. They might be on their, you know, we sort of joked the stereotype of this, you know, loadmaster on their third divorce kind of thing. And, yeah, just some of the behaviors there I didn't align with my personal values. So I guess there was that aspect. Now, the other aspect of the burnout, right, was I think I'd been really dwelling and focusing on fire as an escape plan. And so I had it sort of in my brain that I'm like, oh, I've got to earn as much money as possible. I've got to take all these risks so that I can get there quicker, so that I can get my time back. And so I probably put additional pressure, like perceived pressure on myself, that I needed to, you know, earn extra money. And so, you know, I started this business, we were doing property development. I was still moonlighting at the local aero clubs, and, you know, probably just going a bit too hard. So, you know, if I look back, I probably would, I think I would have, it would have been a lot more sustainable to do something like, you know, like the coast fire approach, where, you know, you don't need to really look at these really ridiculously high savings rates. Because, you know, the irony is now, like, yes, I'm quote unquote retired, but hey, I'm still like working, right? It's just at a much, much, much lower tempo. And so I think, I guess maybe a bit of parting advice for people is, you know, this side hustle porn that you see online, print on demand t-shirts and a few other weird side hustles were just totally crap. So just don't waste your time. I think the best side hustle you can really do is like just do more overtime at your current profession. It's easy. It's just like work more. It's, yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong, I have a lot of success in online business, but I've seen friends or even people online that have read my story and they've gone, oh, wow, I'm going to do this. And then they do it and they don't really see the success that I've had. And it's not a get rich quick overnight scheme. Yeah. A lot of these like side hustles that people G up to be, you know, like life-changing get rich quick schemes, like none of them work. You just, yeah, you really have to put in the time and focus. So I think the easiest kill is to just do extra time at work. But having said that, like I said, I've had a lot of success with my online business. So you know, I still do reckon if people have got the time and the aptitude and they're willing to put in the effort, it's definitely worth having a go. But if you're not really going to be able to commit to it, you know, for like 3+ years, and it's probably something you want to, you know, avoid. Coast fire is probably something that I'd recommend, or definitely like not leaving work, like jumping off that cliff and going from full-time to retirement, right? Because that in itself leads to a bit of an existential crisis. And yeah, it kind of done exactly that, like you mentioned earlier, once I'd left the military and I was caring for my mom, and then that became my purpose. And after she died, and then I really found myself floating again. As a pilot, it's very difficult. But if your career would allow you to sort of scope, like gradually ramp down, you know, 4 days, 3 days, 2 days kind of thing, I would probably suggest looking into that as being like a really more of a sustainable transition. It's hard. Someone like me, my personality, I'm like, you know, all or nothing when I get in there and just, you know, get stuck into it. I guess I would just say chill. Cool your jets a bit.
I love, that's such a great bit of advice, I think, as well, to leave things on, because that is, I do think taking the time to find a little bit of balance in the journey as well as the destination is so important. But Captain Fi, you still talk a lot about all of this stuff. You put some great information out on the internet. So if people want more from you, where can they find you?
Yeah. Oh, thanks for the shout out, Francis. Yeah, I have a blog. It's just captainfi.com. My tempo of posting's been a lot lower now, thanks to being a parent, and there's a lot of work on the acreage now, but yeah, there's a lot of good stuff that I've posted over the last, you know, 7 years or so. There's a podcast as well. I do plan on doing some more, so that's I guess you'd be the Captain Fire podcast or the Financial Independence podcast. Oh, I'm on social media as well. So just type Captain Fire, it's like Facebook or Instagram, you'll see me. Drop me a line. Always love having a chat to people. You know, just bear in mind, I'm not a financial advisor, so I can't really give advice, that kind of stuff. But, you know, always open to have a chat. And yeah, these days it's mostly just pictures of barbecues and the garden and the farms.
I was going to say, I find your Instagram very peaceful these days. It's very nice.
Yeah. It's interesting, you know, I used to be, I guess it was like around financial independence content. It's more just more of a personal blog. And yeah, I do post obviously my figures, net wealth and investments and that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. Just really taking the pressure off and yeah, enjoying it. So yeah, that's kind of sounds appealing to you. And yeah, just let's connect and come and have a chat.
I love it. I love it. And what else is the point of financial independence if it's not to take the foot off the gas now and then and actually reassess the priorities and what you're enjoying? Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your roadmap on how to hit the different levels of financial independence and the way that you've built your life now. I just absolutely love it. So that is Captain Fi, of course. Do go check him out. And don't forget, before you head off, to hit subscribe to Making Sense wherever you're listening. And if this episode was useful to you, send it to a friend as well, so we can all level up on our money together. Until next time, have a great day. Just a note before you go. This podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most cases. It's not individual financial advice. We're all different, so some of this might not apply to your specific situation. Take what works for you, ignore the rest. If you're after individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet.